The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Whether you rent or own, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Go to geico.com today.
The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by ZipRecruiter. Hiring can be hard. Hiring used to be hard, I should say. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, a confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy with ZipRecruiter, the highest rating hiring site in America. And now our listeners can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Fantasy, you're in the 06010. Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Happy Monday to you all, and thanks to those that are watching on the Fantasy Focus live stream via Twitter. My name is Field Yates with Stefania Bell and Michael Clay. It is Marathon Monday, so Mike is giving Matthew some extra hours of beauty sleep.
Yeah, I am. I'm getting well rested as best I can as well, at least as best I can with a 4-year-old kicking me in the back all night long. But I'm hanging in there, ready to roll.
We're going to be a late night. You in the back all night. Sounds like a wonderful way to finish the weekend. Stefania, you were a busy woman this weekend in Indianapolis, but
were
back and ready for the marathon.
Ready as I'm going to be. How come I didn't get the extra beauty sleep?
You're out working hard, Stefania. Yeah. That's the reason why. It is Marathon Monday. As we mentioned, it's also Mock Draft Monday. Look for the various people that are part of the ESPN fantasy staff here tweeting links to join them in their mock draft room. And then starting at 6 p.m. Eastern time tonight, 29, not 28, not 24, not 20, 29 straight hours fantasy football coverage. It's all over television. It begins at 6 p.m. with SportsCenter. Matthew Berry and Adam Schefter are going to be on for 29 straight hours. Send them all the amino acids and Red Bulls and vitamin B that you possibly can find.
It's like this is like a holiday for Matthew, though. It's like Santa's coming. And every year he loves it. It's his favorite thing. He'll gripe about, you know, getting no sleep and being awake, but it is his favorite thing. So happy Marathon Day, Matt.
I was a little nervous that we were going to see a tweet from Schefter at like 4:30 this morning, which has happened on previous marathon editions. No 4:30 a.m. tweet from Adam Schefter. The earliest I think I saw was like 7:30, which gives me a bit of hope. Today on the show, we're going to give you another list, three lists of three, sort of. It's takeaway form from the rest of what we saw in week two, technically, but really the full first week of preseason action. We're going to hopefully take a number of your Twitter questions and also send in some more good ones again at Fantasy Focus. We also have Stefania's recap of her trip to Indianapolis. So let me ask you this, or let me just revisit a poll, because last week we asked this question: who will be the wide receiver two in Jacksonville this season? We gave you three options: Dante Moncrief, Keelan Cole, and Dede Westbrook. The results show that Dede Westbrook came out on top, 46% for Dede Westbrook. Do we have any idea how many votes we got on that one, Daniel? Or Kyle, for that matter?
No, we don't. You'd think we would have set something up before the show and we would have looked at like how many results there were. Let's just say 2,000, somewhere around there, give or take.
So 20,000 votes from our listeners and viewers.
It's extremely scientific,
at
this poll.
Fantasy Focus, we actually had 2,063 votes, according to Kyle Soppy.
Thirsty
Let's continue to build that audience at Fantasy Focus. And if you're listening to the audio version here, we would love for you guys to be a part of the show during the live stream during the day. Even if you're at work and want to check out 5 minutes of the show, that helps us.
Yeah,
and
you can drop in. It's like you're stopping by a room. Drop in, say hello, throw a tweet our way.
Yeah, ask a question, vote in the poll, whatever it might be. We'll get back to all of the poll interactive stuff, but time now for some football.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
News or noise?
Loud noises!
Still one of our favorite drops we've had in show history. News or noise / three lists of three smashed into one big takeaway from, again, we're calling it week two of the preseason, but it was effectively week one for everybody besides the Bears and the Ravens. Stefania, you cautioned us on Friday, despite Darius Guy saying he thinks he's fine, and despite initial reports saying it might not be that major of an injury, you said, let's just be careful here. Unfortunately, the worst fear has been realized as Darius Geis has suffered a torn ACL.
Right. And if you were watching him, I think he jogged off the field. I mean, and it's sometimes hard for the player to even believe that the injury has been that serious. And with ACLs, it's funny because you can have a guy who can't move afterwards, or you have a guy who does what Darius Geis did. And sometimes it's not until later they're taking a step. I don't know if you guys remember when Carson Palmer had his second ACL tear and he was walking towards the locker room and he kind of looked his leg was going to buckle.
I remember
that. And that was like, that's like the final moment when that instability kicks in. Sometimes there's spasm that keeps, it kind of makes them feel like they're more stable than they are, but the people that, examining it, they have a reason for, you know, pressing for the testing. They're concerned that something else more serious is going on. And obviously, unfortunately for Geis, he's done for the year. The good news, as always, when you have the injury early, your chances of being ready to go by the start of next season are much better. There's never any guarantees. And there's also risk of re-injury after these type of injuries, especially in a younger player. Some guys are more prone to having a second ACL tear than others, but the bottom line is that he's not available now. And so, unfortunately, Matthew Berry and everybody else who was super high on Darius Geis will have to move on for this season.
Mike, let's get into what this means for the Redskins backfield beyond Darius Geis. We understand, like, first of all, our best wishes are with Darius and his recovery. And Stefania said the silver lining of these preseason injuries is that he should be ready to roll by 2019 when the season begins. Football wise, Mike, spinning things forward a little bit. The Redskins have some incumbent pieces. Right now, that's all they have. If you were to evaluate the leftover backs, how would you stack up this backfield going forward?
Yeah, and this is going to sound a lot like last season, right? You got the same three guys at the top of the depth chart. I think we have to start with Chris Thompson here. He was the number 10 scoring fantasy running back through week 11 last season before he suffered a knee injury of his own. And yes, he said he may not be 100% until November. But again, it sounds like he's going to play at least in week one. And if he's out in the field, he's going to be their top back. We know he's their best pass catcher for sure. He's finished top 15 of the position in catches each of the past two seasons. And again, that's with missing six games last year. So he's terrific. He's effective as a rusher and a receiver, and we know he's going to be on the field. Otherwise, you're taking a late round dart throw here. Rob Kelly, Samaje Perine, we don't know which of those two will emerge. Honestly, I know they said they're not going to yet, but they could still go outside the team facility to add another running back as well. So for now, it's just that late round stabs on those two guys, and Chris Thompson, he could take, I'd say, around round six.
Let's be honest. Every time a team deals with an injury, the plan is always to begin, let's evaluate what we have in house. Mm-hmm. Separate from when, you know, an extreme quarterback situation like Teddy Bridgewater a few years ago.
Tannehill last year.
At running back, wide receiver, where you already have multiple players that are playing a lot of snaps in a given game, you're always going to look in house. Mike, just face it, I mean, we're not nearly as optimistic about those two other sort of potential feature backs as we were about Darius Geis this year. Interesting question that was posed from Alexander Turk to at Fantasy Focus on Twitter. If you are doing a rookie, here's the question. If you were doing a rookie or slash free agent startup draft right now, was he specifically asking about rookie dynasty leagues or what?
Rookie/free agent.
Yeah, rookie/free agent drafts, but I want to make a dynasty or keeper leagues as a part of that because I think that's a big part of this question.
Yeah, I'll answer the question, where would you draft Darius Geis? But probably important to draw the distinction between a keeper league and a dynasty league. If you've been playing fantasy football for a long time, it's very possible you are thinking to yourself, we know the difference. But for those who are fairly new to the game, which we have some new audience members, maybe some millennials, maybe some people that decided that once I became a part of this podcast, Stefania and I were a formidable duo. Having Matthew around was like, yeah, we have to listen. Anyways, dynasty versus keeper league. Subtle but important differences, Mike.
Yeah, a keeper really depends on how many keepers you have. At some point, as you add keepers to your league, you get closer and closer to dynasty. The fewer you have, you're closer to a season-long draft. So if you only have 1 to 3 keepers, it's basically a season-long draft. You might move the needle a tiny bit towards like a Corey Davis over an Emmanuel Sanders, you know, even if you have Sanders over him in the short term. But really, you're just focused on the upcoming year. So, and I've had a lot of questions about this too with Geis. Do I still pick him early and just keep him as one of my three keepers? No, I mean, you're going to have better. You're probably going to have 3 to 5, 6, maybe better keeper options this time next year. Why would you waste a roster spot all season long?
So that's in a keeper league, but in the dynasty league, Mike, the conversation changes quite a bit.
It does. It does. I mean, it is
because dynasty players, for those who are unfamiliar, you draft them and they stay with your roster for basically as long as you like.
Yes, like a full keeper. Yes. A full keeper. I would say this. I did move him down in my rookie rankings and my dynasty rankings. we always look at the ceiling, right? Guys has a very high ceiling. He could be a tremendous player, an RB1 for a long time, but we don't know that for sure, right? Yep. There is still a chance that maybe he's not the same, or he just doesn't live up to expectations. That's possible. So I'm going to take guys that have similar upside, maybe not quite as good as Geis right now, but they're going to play this season. We're going to get a look at them, so they'll have more perceived value as well when you're hunting around for trades, and maybe you could get a lot of usage out of them this season. So I dropped him down. I have Barkley still first. I have always had Rashad Penny at two, so I still like him there. Then Ronald Jones, Sony Michel, Nick Chubb, Royce Freeman. I moved them all ahead of Darius Geis in rookie drafts, in dynasty leagues. Kerryon Johnson, it's a close call. I might go with him as well.
We'll get to Kerryon Johnson in just a little bit, but Stefania, good injury news, because I admit when I hear MRI, I am sort of triggered, right? I just get fearful. MRI for Jerick McKinnon, 49ers running back, revealed what?
We are hearing that it was a muscle strain. Nick Wagner, who covers the 49ers for us, part of NFL Nation, reported that it is a calf strain. So, and if you're wondering, you know, they look at a knee MRI. You've got essentially three major muscle groups that cross the knee, the quad in the front of the thigh, the hamstring in the back of the thigh, and then the calf. And the calf attaches up behind the knee. So, you know, it's hard to know how serious the injury is because we didn't get any more information other than a muscle strain. Is it a mild strain? Is it a more moderate strain? And the difference in those would be length of time you'd expect a player to be out. With Nick Wagner's tweet, he said the team reported that he would rest all of this week, be evaluated next week. Has the suggestion that it's more on the minor side. But again, when you have an injury like this to the guy who's expected to be your primary back, or at least carry a significant amount of the work, you're probably not going to see him again in the preseason, or it's going to be very limited. The other thing I would caution you on is calf strains are notoriously tricky, because guys will feel great walking around, and it's not till they have to put power off that leg, require some burst, that all of a sudden they feel it and there can be a setback. And the last thing you want is for him to come out in week four of the preseason just to get a little run and then have it get worse, and now you've knocked him out for another month. So the problem for the 49ers is you've got Matt Breida expected to miss potentially the rest of the preseason.
Yep.
You've got Jerick McKinnon, who knows if you're going to see him the rest of the preseason. I'm going to be really nervous, both as a 49ers fan and a fantasy player, about what to expect week one if we don't get to see them much.
Who's left, Mike?
We had Joe Williams there. Remember him? Mr. Hype from this time last year.
Look, he was hurt last year. He's probably like, see? Now it's my turn. Yeah. You guys are
maybe 20 touches for Kyle Juszczyk in week one. That would be fun. Jeremy McNichols is there as well. So there's a couple bodies there. I think Joe Williams, not probably in a season long, I'm not drafting him right now. Keep him stashed in deep leagues dynasty. But for now, it sounds like, again, I don't want to get in trouble with Stefania again. I sound like his guy seems okay based on what he said last week, and that didn't prove too well. But I mean, it seems
To your point, just to say, Jerick McKinnon, the reports were, when I was looking, so I'm traveling and I see Jerick McKinnon went down in practice clutching his knee, right? So that was McKinnon ends up being less severe. Geis jogs off and he's like, I'm good.
Right.
And it ends up being season ending.
Ridiculous.
And so you never really know. But the concern, at least in from a fantasy perspective, all due respect to the injuries, the thing with Geis is, you know. Okay, he's done for this year. With McKinnon, you don't really. And you're nervous when they start to come back. And is it going to be a recurring problem? And there's a lot more question there, even though the initial news is good news.
Yeah. I think the key may here probably don't overreact right yet. You don't have to cross him off your board.
If you were drafting today, I would take my chances on Jerick McKinnon getting healthy and being ready for week one, or Matt Breida, as opposed to some of these other running backs
Agreed.
On the roster.
Definitely.
And say, maybe they prove to be the dart throw. Let's put some context here. Kirk Cousins makes his Minnesota debut, obviously got all the money in the world to sign there, high expectations, small sample size. He played one drive, one effective drive at that, 4 for 4, 41 yards, and a touchdown against Denver. It was actually Stephon Diggs who had the highlight of the first team offense, in my opinion, for Minnesota. Beautiful catch on a floating ball from Cousins down the right sideline over Bradley Roby, the standout cornerback for the Broncos. I think the question maybe, Mike, is this is... Kirk Cousins has had upside of top five potential in each of the past few years with Washington, some concerns, my own included, that you go to Minnesota where you can run the football more effectively, you can win games where you're up by two touchdowns in the fourth quarter, you don't have to throw it. But is there still top five upside for Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, I think so. He's been top eight each of the past three seasons. You mentioned some of the potential drawbacks, but you can also add in better defense. Maybe they're in scoring position more often. He obviously is a great wide receiver duo. Maybe three if Laquon Treadwell emerges in his third season, which isn't as crazy as it sounds after what we saw from Nelson Aguilar last year. You have Kyle Rudolph, obviously, you have Dalvin Cook as well. So there is a good offense around him. There's an opportunity for this team to be top five in offensive yards, certainly in scoring points. So there's definitely tremendous upside here. He's done it for a long time. We have to give him that credit that he's been a good fantasy quarterback, at least a solid NFL quarterback. So I can see it for sure.
The balance for me that I'm having with Kirk Cousins is this. I think he unquestionably has the best weapons of his career right now in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. But he also has, like I said, I just don't know there are going to be times this year where he is frequently asked to throw the football 8 to 14 times in the fourth quarter and pick up 150 yards in the process. That being said, I feel comfortable with where he's at. You know, a top 8 or so quarterback for me. And the Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen debate, if you're having it at home, I think the answer is not like you have to choose one or the other, because people do often ask that this time of the year. Two good players in the same roster, Demaryius Thomas, Emmanuel Sanders, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen. Both are good options. Both are into the top 15 this year for ESPN ranks. Rookies are almost always all the rage in preseason for obvious reasons, right? They're sort of the shiny object syndrome, right? New guys on the block. Sam Darnold with 13 for 18 for 96 yards and a touchdown in his debut for the Jets. His 14-yard touchdown pass went to Charles Johnson. I think he was a Grand Valley State standout. I think Grand Valley State's near where Daniel is from. So shout out to Grand
in
Valley
Michigan.
State.
Yeah.
Mike, I don't think he has any redraft value, but you are our dynasty guy here at ESPN. Where might he stack up? And we've had this conversation previously, but now you have a bit more context to your rookie quarterback dynasty rankings.
Maybe confirmation bias here, right?
Yeah,
number one on my board, right? So if he comes out playing well, you love it. If a guy who you didn't like plays poorly, you feel good. Well, not good for him, but you feel good about your rankings, at least your evaluation skills. But yeah, Darnold, I have him. It was very tough with Baker Mayfield, who looked good as well, for that number one spot at quarterback. I'm not going to reach on any of these guys in rookie drafts too early. There's too many guys at receiver, tight end, running back that you need to address that are more important in those leagues. But Darnold's still atop my board. He looks good. There's nothing else to say there.
And you know what? Here's where I think the conversation could change. Is Adam Schefter, I believe, has already said that he is expected to play a lot, as in like maybe the majority of the snaps with the first team on Thursday night. When's their next game? I think I believe they play Thursday night against the Redskins right here on ESPN. I, of course, am a company man. See, it's like for a minute,
good for you,
I forgot
man.
It, and then it came back.
It's like all of a sudden that little light bulb went ding.
It's amazing the way that like when Field forgets things, he forgets them for like a split second. I forget things, it's
what's
like,
that like
30 minutes later, I'm still trying to figure out what I forgot.
Well, you know, I was in the middle of crafting a tweet that I thought was pertinent, and I'll share it with you guys.
Okay, now he's just made it even worse,
right?
Because he was multitasking.
Because the guy was doing another thing.
And he still had the ability to recall something. And
yeah.
What's it like to be...
Yeah.
Young
although I did find out it is Thursday is the game. Field forgot to take your ginkgo biloba, but you said Thursday. I thought you said Wednesday.
No. Wednesday. Now you've made three mistakes while Field's gotten everything right.
But is ginkgo biloba the right
football?
Thing you take?
What?
Is that correct?
In any event, we might see much more of Sam Darnold against the Redskins, and the Redskins and Jets were fighting on Sunday. So that game could be spicy like a tomato. Kerryon Johnson for Daniels. Do you want to have this segment or no?
No, I want you to do it. You're a professional.
Okay. Kerryon Johnson was the Lions' second round pick out of Auburn. In his final season in college, he had just 18 catches. In his first NFL preseason game, he had 7 rushes for 34 yards, but he caught 4 passes for 33 yards in his debut against Oakland. Mike, you mentioned him just a moment ago. Did he do more than you expected?
No, that's about right. I mean, I think he was the second round pick.
Oh, come on, Mike. Give the guy some credit here.
Mike, here's how it works, Mike. You are our go-to when it comes to someone being not around, you are available.
And usually you get that email from Daniel.
Like, so you want Daniel to continue to ask you to be part of the show?
I think I was about to say something nice about Kerryon Johnson.
Were you?
Yes.
All right.
I think the way I answered that was correctly to say something positive.
Got it.
Yeah, 67 yards. He was a second round pick. We knew he would get some decent run. He was in the double digit touches. You know, I don't think it's shocking that he played well. My concern with him is not that he's a good prospect. It's that where's the playing time? Can he get enough to hit his fantasy ceiling with Theo Riddick in there, who's one of the best pass catching running backs in the NFL, has been doing it a long time. And with LeGarrette Blount there, who's one of the better running, just pure runners in the NFL, certainly one of the more underrated ones. I can't imagine those two guys are just phased out. It's possible he pushes for 15-plus touches, but I'm nervous that he's going to get there often.
On Saturday morning on SportsCenter, Mike Clay was looking very sharp with his brand-new haircut. I believe teal combo, teal shirt and tie.
It was, yeah.
And you were reacting to him.
He remembers everything. That's impressive.
Elephants never forget. I'm like an elephant. Mike was reacting to the idea of Darius Geis being replaced potentially by Ameer Abdullah. The point is that the Redskins may well have to explore the trade market to find a running back. And they may do it in short order. People have said to me, they'll just wait for cutdowns on September 1 and then pick somebody up and plug and play.
Because that's a great time to learn the offense.
Because, you know, other than Brett Favre to the Jets, like normally a quarterback or any player of prominence arriving on September 1 does not mean, you know, it's rare that that works out. Comfortably and expediently. So let's keep an eye on whether the Redskins do explore the trade market, and Ameer Abdullah will be a sensible name. I mentioned that because I do think that Kerryon Johnson is in a bit of a logjam right now. What has impressed me, and I know has impressed people watching camp daily in Detroit, is that he's a bit more of a pass catcher than maybe the expectation was. I mean, 18 rushing touchdowns last year, SEC Offensive Player of the Year last season. A lot of us felt like, hey, he's going to come in there and be a thumper, at maybe whether it's, you know, the counterpunch to LeGarrette Blount or the eventual replacement to LeGarrette Blount. So let's keep an eye on Kerryon Johnson, who certainly is making some favorable impressions. Speaking of rookie running backs making strong impressions, Royce Freeman being drafted as running back 18 right now. He, of course, is the Broncos' third-round pick, 4 rushes for 38 yards and 23 touchdowns. Defying it, the quarterback did not play well for Denver in their first preseason game, but encouraging to see the running back play like this.
Yes, and we've been talking about the hype of Royce Freeman. And remember back when we had our fantasy summit, and we were saying, look, I said it. Devontae Booker was the guy that they were hyping up last year because he was better in pass protection and he was somebody who could catch the ball. And then he gets hurt. His wrist is injured. Never really felt like he was 100% last year. And whether that was skill set or a combination of being delayed because of the injury, it was hard to tell. So we knew they were going to push each other in camp. And we said, look out for Royce Freeman. And this is only adding to the hype that Royce Freeman eventually overtakes Booker for this job.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance that it happens just like Stefania said on that same timeline. So, Mike, is RB18 too early for a player that as of right now is not the starting running back?
No, that's right about where I have him. I mean, you should always hedge a little bit with your rankings, you know, consider the ceiling and the floor, but you should lean toward the guy you think's a better player. That's kind of why I lean towards, for example, in Seattle, towards Penny still a little bit more, because I think even though I like Carson, he's a little bit of a better prospect. I'm not a big Booker guy. I thought he clearly has really struggled his first 2 years. They take Freeman in the third round for a reason. He looks great. My only concern with him from a fantasy perspective is, you know, Booker's specialty is catching the football.
Right.
How much is Freeman involved? You look at his 51 games at Oregon, averaged 19 carries a game, but only 1.5 catches per game. Mm-hmm. We've seen guys change that in the NFL. You kind of just alluded to that with Johnson a little bit. Maybe that happens, but that's a small concern area for me. But I certainly think he can be deliver RB2 numbers.
Yeah, I wonder if like they'll ever, and I doubt they will, but like will they ever declare this guy as our starting running back? Because going into the season, it would help me if we had that kind of assurance whether we get it.
There are a lot of teams
who
would like to ask them to do that.
Yeah, that's
please
true.
Clarify.
That'd be nice.
For fantasy.
On the other end of the spectrum, I don't want to say a less than impressive rookie running back because, again, first preseason game. But if you read the box score of the Seahawks game against the Colts late Thursday night, you'd see that Rashad Penny, their first round pick, had 8 carries for 16 yards. Meanwhile, Chris Carson, the 7th round pick last year, and a Mike Clay favorite during the pre-draft process, 4 carries for 27 yards. So I ask you this, Mike, on the scale of it's just week one of the preseason to overreaction theater is my specialty and listed on my resume, where do you find yourself on Rashad Penny's slow start?
Yeah. Well, first of all, let me add this. According to my friends over at Pro Football Focus, I think you saw this if you watched all these plays, Penny actually had more broken tackles. So he was just getting hit in the backfield, didn't have as many clear running lanes as Carson did. That being said, I'll admit I'm getting a little more nervous about Carson stealing carries early on in the season. But like I just said a few minutes ago, I'm going to lean towards the guy I think's the better prospect here. I really believe Penny, the similarities between Penny and Kareem Hunt from last year are unbelievable in terms of size, speed, elusiveness, tackle breaking. It's uncanny, honestly. And I think it's not going to take him long to prove that he's the better guy. He's going to be out there making explosive plays, and he's going to force his way into a big role. So I'm still okay with him. I mean, his ADP is going to fall a little bit. You can get him in the sixth round. I'm still going to take that step. And that still lets you take Carson later, too. He's going late.
This is my exactly how I feel, is that right now is not the time to reverse your feelings about Rashad Penny and Chris Carson. What it does reinforce is that Chris Carson remains one of our favorite later round flyers. And yeah, Rashad Penny was drafted in the first round for a reason. If they felt like they had the running back situation solved, they would not have traded up to pick 27 to land Rashad Penny, a player that we are still excited about. And sometimes the jokes write themselves, right? Sometimes they do. Apparently playing for the Browns, sorry Keith, is a punishment. Antonio Callaway, who many know because of his, he had some concerns coming out of Florida, a very talented prospect who was disciplined on multiple occasions, dropped to the fourth round, was recently cited in Florida, and there's been all kinds of red flags that they've had to deal with in Cleveland. So rather than Antonio Callaway being sequestered to the bench or not allowed to be on the field with his teammates, Hugh Jackson kept him in the game. He said yesterday that basically, you know, that's a game. You know, I think the takeaway is really this. You know, players who leave a preseason game early, it's an earned rite of passage, right? You're a starter. You get that rest in the third and fourth quarters. Antonio Callaway has to continue to earn that. On the field, separate and apart from the punishments and how much he played, I mean, he looked really solid. Three catches for 87 yards and a touchdown, Mike. Are you buying the idea that he can be a riser this year, a sleeper, a prominent part of this offense?
Well, first of all, I think it's going to be a low volume pass offense, especially with Tyrod Taylor scrambling a lot. So I do worry about the third receiver. If Josh Gordon and Jarvis Landry are there, not to mention David Njoku, Duke Johnson catching passes, I worry about him seeing enough of a target share to make an impact in fantasy. So if Gordon misses time or Landry's hurt, something like that, then I think there's a lot of upside here. But otherwise, it's really hard for me to fit him in that top 200 and say he's draftable. But by the way, just remember this about him as a prospect. He went in the fourth round. He didn't even play a down last year because of the off-field trouble. I mean, this guy is a crazy high pedigree prospect, 4'4", 1". I mean, and he's not tiny. 5'11", 200. There's at least decent size there with a good speed, good vert. I mean, the guy has big upside.
I do tell you, though. Makes me want to watch the next episode of Hard Knocks.
For sure. There's going to be a lot of drama this week.
Tuesday night on HBO, of course, also available on HBO Go. And I believe it's called HBO Now is the other. I was fiddling around with my
HBO
Apple
Now
TV
and
last
HBO
night.
Go.
Yeah, two very useful resources, I would say. Here's my thing on Antonio Callaway. And Mike, I agree with you in that, like, it's hard for me to find room for him inside my top 200 players right now for this reason. At some point during this podcast so far, and we're now in the first day of our third week of the season, we have said, hey, Jarvis Landry might have top 15 upside. Josh Gordon could have top 20 upside. David Njoku could have top 10 tight end upside. Duke Johnson could catch 60 passes.
The entire Browns pass catching core are top 10 worthy.
Right. We're saying that, like,
elite
players in these
elite.
Browns, right. We're saying all these right. players in the Browns offense have immense upside. I'll note this, that it's important for people to know and sort of like how the sausage is made when it comes to preseason rankings. You are not saying, I am not saying, like, hey, I have these players ranked in this way, and this is exactly how they are going to finish. It is in order of likelihood that they finish within a certain range at their position. So, obviously, it's very unlikely that Antonio Callaway and Josh Gordon and Jarvis Landry are going to finish as a top, let's say, 45 or 50 wide receiver. That being said, amongst third wideouts on their roster, I find it more believable that Antonio Callaway could finish as a top 50 wideout than, let's say, Braxton Miller, for example. He might be six on their depth chart right now.
PQQT.
Right, that's right. So we're just sort of evaluating. Matt talks about range of outcomes often. It's about range of outcomes. Playing the Dynasty League, I'm interested in Antonio Callaway because we don't know what Josh Gordon's future is in Cleveland beyond this season. We don't even know what his future is for this season.
Right.
Stefania, you were in Indianapolis over the weekend. As if you don't work enough, you traveled during one of your rare final weekends before the season begins. What did you find? I'm just gonna, like, empty out the notebook. What did you find?
Oh, it was great. First of all, shout out to the whole PR team at Colts Camp for just making it such a wonderful trip, and really ensuring that I was able to visit with a lot of folks and watch practice. And it was, let me just set the scene. Cornfield right across from camp. They're at a new facility, out of Grand Park. And so you really totally get the flavor of being in the Midwest, and the players are really liking this new camp location that they have. After Andrew Luck had played in his first game, I was really curious to get the vibe around the team of what they thought, and also see how he was, you know, sort of what with that offense, who's getting the most run, who's getting the most reps with the first team. And that's why I spent the 2 days watching. Marlon Mack obviously went out with a hamstring injury in that first game, and my sense is that you're probably not going to see him again for the rest of the preseason. He is probably he's probably the lead guy in the backfield right now, but then there's a whole mix of other players that are sort of up for grabs and getting some run. I talked with Nyheim Hines. This is a kid who's very versatile. He's a punt returner and a kick returner and a running back who also catches passes. So he's very eager and very earnest, but he did not have a great night Thursday night. And he knew. He told me it was a dream that turned into a nightmare. But you really want him to succeed because he's a hard worker. He was getting some mix in with the ones. Jordan Wilkins was getting some mix in with the ones. Kristen Michael. Getting a lot of reps. I mean, actually to the point where I was almost a little bit surprised at how much run he was getting in practice on two consecutive days. So, and then right after I came back, they signed Brandon Oliver. So, you guys can talk about your thoughts on that, but I think the rest of the Colts backfield looks very, very murky to me as far as the run game goes.
I think the simple part is the Brandon Oliver equation is just like you got to get through camp with guys.
Right. You need guys.
Again, remember Colts offensive coordinator Nick Sirianni left the Chargers this offseason to take that job. Brandon Oliver was with the Chargers last year. Familiar face, familiar system, easy breezy there. But on the guys that are going to be around for a while, Mike, we know which team you ride with, and that's Team Jordan Wilkins.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and you look good. We've already talked about this. I could tell the story again if you want about the third down conversion. Should we get into it?
Thursday night.
Play the tape.
Third and
play
two.
Play the tape.
Glory awaits if they can clinch their first win of the 2018 NFL preseason.
Exactly. But he has a chance now. I mean, Stefania just told you about the guy struggling, the injuries. I mean, this is his opportunity. He's the healthy guy. He has three down upside. This is his chance here to make a name for himself. So we'll see if he takes it and runs with it. He has a shot.
It's a very interesting. I'll be interested to watch the next game because, like I said, they're all good. But the Kristen Michael one, that surprised me. As far as the receiving core, who are the main pass catchers for them? It's not a huge surprise, but maybe confirmation because it's T.Y. Hilton and it's Jack Doyle. And these two seem to me to be Andrew Luck's preferred targets, no matter what they're running in the offense. A lot of Jack Doyle in the red zone. He is a guy who secures the ball. I don't think I ever saw him miss the ball unless it was just a bad pass that was off the mark from Andrew Luck. I talked with Jack Doyle afterwards. First of all, shout out to him because he's familiar with fantasy. You know, you ask players and sometimes they're like, oh yeah, I know what fantasy football is, but I don't play or I'm not big into it. He went on and on about how much the fantasy football has helped support players, you know, promoted the game and promoted the players within the game. So really like that. He was also pretty excited. I was telling him that he was on our, you know, he's on the cusp there of that top 10 tight end and how he thought he would finish. And while he's too humble of a guy to say, oh yeah, you know, he wasn't like draft me, but you can tell that he is a favored target. And if there was any concern that bringing Eric Ebron in would diminish that, what I saw in practice from two consecutive days is that that's not a worry. Eric Ebron is huge. He's physical. He made an amazing catch in practice where a ball was thrown behind him. He grabbed it with one hand and reeled it in. But he dropped way more than he caught. And a lot of the easy passes. And in the red zone, the guy that I saw Luck looking to all the time was Jack Doyle.
Stefania just encapsulated Eric Ebron's career in one small fantasy focus mini recap there. But interesting on Jack Doyle, he had 80 catches last year.
And yeah.
It's the volume.
He was like, I think he came in, he had like the season where he was second in Colts history for like number of receptions in the year. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, absolutely. And his ADP's fallen. Yep. I mean, he's coming cheaper and cheaper, and you can get a value. I mentioned this before. Sometimes if you're deciding between two guys, go with the better player. Doyle's a good player. Ebron has had, I mean, he was never even a top 12 guy in Detroit all those seasons. I'm gonna hedge my bets towards Doyle for sure.
I want to just quickly wrap up the Colts running backs for a second and ask both of you this. Do you believe it's more likely that one running back distinguishes himself at some point and is the weekly fantasy starter in this backfield, or that this becomes a backfield that you have to stay away from entirely because there's just too many players that contribute a little bit here or there.
I left feeling like I'm staying away.
Okay.
Interesting. Yeah. I would say I'm going to take the guy that I think has the most is most likely
Let
to have
guess.
That three down skill set.
His name rhymes with
Kristen Michael.
It's not a few seasons ago. Yes, I was on the Michael train in Seattle. I think Wilkins has the best shot, so I will take the late round stab.
Okay.
So remember, it's going to be a high scoring offense, most
you
likely.
You do believe that there is a chance,
yeah,
like the more likely chance that one player distinguishes himself.
I think, yeah, I think it's very possible.
There's one other player at Colts camp that people might be interested in.
And that is, of course, certain wide receiver.
Yeah, number 12.
Andy. Oh, quarterback. I thought you were going to say, I thought we were going to go
the guy with the new mustache, right?
Yes.
Seeing that floating around, his mustache?
Oh, no.
This must have been right after you left.
No, it's a pretty good mustache. Working, but thanks. No, well, first of all, we saw Andrew Luck play Thursday night, and you saw probably made you feel pretty good if you were interested in seeing how he looked. I also spoke with Marcus Brady, quarterback's coach, about the fact that you saw a lot of short and intermediate work in that first game, but what else did they like that they saw? And it was just they liked the fact that Andrew Luck got hit. And got back up. They like that he took a sack and got back up because all of those things help build confidence. We talked about that. He said that Luck acknowledged, a couple of the passes sailed on him. You probably saw that. The one in T.Y.'s direction in particular kind of went over his head. Just getting the timing down and getting the rest worked out. I asked if the plan was to expand the repertoire of throws now to get the longer balls. That's what we want to see. And he said that yesterday, Sunday, when I was there, Andrew Luck had come in and said, I'm ready to throw everything, you know? And so the confidence from the quarterback that he's ready to go and he's ready to do, to make all the throws, I think you're going to see it really open up on the offense. The other thing that I think is interesting, and this is just more a little bit of an observation that won't surprise anyone, but it was just interesting to see. Andrew Luck does not have an idle moment in practice. He is chatting with, if it was a running back, like one of the rookies who he wanted to, he'd come up and be talking to him and pointing out something with a play. If it was Eric Ebron dropping a pass in the red zone, he'd go and chat with him, kind of fist bump him like it's okay and have a chat. I saw at one point he and T.Y. And Ryan Grant, who's also getting a bit of run there, were sitting there chatting and they're constantly working. There is not one idle moment. And every guy there said to me, that's not just how he is today. That's how he is all the time. He's such a leader. And you can feel a vibe there that everybody is much more optimistic.
I kind of feel like Andrew Luck would be the perfect quarterback for the live edition of our podcast. The audio version, obviously, we have some latitude. When Matthew wants to get into an obscenity laden rant, you can do so. Daniels has to put a lot of bleeps in there. Andrew Luck's the kind of guy that, like, Eric Ebron drops a pass in the end zone. He's like, gosh,
next
jolly
time.
Eric, you just keep working hard. You're going to get that next one, you know? He just seems like the nicest guy. I remember Kevin Clark of The Ringer had a great piece a few years ago about Andrew Luck's trash talk, which was really more like, you know, the kind of like compliments.
Fantastic. It was awesome.
Really good.
Yeah, and apparently that happens every single day. They love him. So
move him up to QB7.
QB7 says Mike. Yeah, I've got him at QB8 myself. Football is back, and SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every game all season long. Whether you're searching for a last minute deal, planning a night out, or need to find the perfect gift, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like being there in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. By searching multiple ticket sites and grading every ticket based on value, SeatGeek helps you immediately identify the best seats to fit your budget. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. And it doesn't end with sports. SeatGeek has plenty of tickets to concerts, comedy, and theater, too. Best of all, listeners to our show get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter the code FFF today. That's promo code FFF for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event. We have the tickets.
You're in the home 6010.
All right, we're back. And a reminder, tweet at Fantasy Focus. I know you guys are maybe tired of hearing that if you already follow at Fantasy Focus, but we need to continue to build that audience because you ask more questions, we answer more of those questions, and with the time left we have in today's show, we're going to answer some questions that have already been submitted and perhaps add a few new ones if people tweet at Fantasy Focus right now. Do us a favor, tell your friends as well. What do you got for us, Keith?
Tell your friends. Josh Wilson wants to know, with the injuries to the Washington backfield, does Josh Doctson's likelihood of a breakout increase? What's his ceiling?
All right, the injuries to the Washington backfield, obviously it's Darius Geis. I tend to think of these things as disconnected.
Agreed.
The play of Josh Doctson and Darius Geis, to me, were not linked prior to the injury and do not remain linked after the injury.
Yeah, maybe they decide on a 2nd and 7 to throw instead of run now and maybe gets an extra few targets. But what it comes down to for Doctson is, are you an NFL starting receiver or aren't you? You know, and we didn't see that last year. He was under a 50% catch rate. Yes, he scored 6 touchdowns, but he had 17 end zone targets. That was 7th most in the entire NFL. It was really about volume, the reason he even was competent in fantasy football. He was playing huge snaps. So we'll see. I mean, obviously, major upside. It's his de facto 2nd season. He's positioned to play an every down role with Alex Smith here. It's going to come down to how good he is.
I will say this. The chatter that I've heard is that, you know, there seems to be a connection building with him and Alex Smith, and that he is dominating in practice and really looking like that number one receiver. So, you know, different quarterback, different opportunities potentially in the end zone.
So, again, we all agree in the same way there, just about like the relationship between wide receiver and running back in that regard. But here's a different question about running back wide receiver relationship. What do you got, Keith?
Yeah, Kevin Joyce asks, how do you feel about drafting an RB1, your RB1 and your I'm going to repeat this. How do you feel about drafting your RB1 and wide receiver one from the same offense?
All right, so pretty simple question here. And there's a piece that you'll see a bunch. It's been awesome to see how much it's been around on the Sports Center over the weekend. But 9 rules of drafting. I don't have an issue with them. Mm-hmm. You?
I do not. And here's why. Think about some of these connections. I wrote down a few of these when I saw this question. Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown's the obvious one. I mean, I don't think anybody's going to have a problem having those.
But nobody's ever going to get those
That's
two
fair.
Together.
But some of these other ones, some of these other ones you can, and it's certainly a good situation to be in. David Johnson, Larry Fitzgerald, Saquon Barkley, Odell Beckham, Alvin Kamara, Michael Thomas, Kareem Hunt, Tyreek Hill on the fence, Dalvin Cook, Adam Thielen, or Stephon Diggs, Melvin Gordon, Keenan Allen, Devonta Freeman, Julio Jones, and again, another one kind of on the fence here, Joe Mixon, AJ Green. I would be totally fine having any of those duos.
Don't you think it's a perception thing though? Because I've heard people say this, like it feels like somebody's taking, like if I'm rooting for my running back, then I'm rooting against my wide receiver. And that's not, you have to remind yourself, like they don't know that they're, you know, they're not vying for catches one versus the other in your league.
Or you get points every single play.
Right.
On
That's the other way of looking at it. Like, take the quarterback too.
There you go. Why not stack them up? Especially in deeper leagues. And, you know, if you're in a deeper league and maybe a 16-teamer, you need to distinguish yourself and you want to wait, and especially later in the draft, and get Alex Smith, who's cheap, Josh Doctson, Paul Richardson, take the shot on Jordan Reed, build around that offense. I mean, if that's a home run.
I was with you till you said Jordan Reed, but okay.
8th round, 9th round, he's in my article. I'm telling you, a league-winning strategy this year, it very well could win a lot of leagues, and I cover this in my piece. Jordan Reed, Andrew Luck in round 8 and 9. I mean, if they both hit at that spot, that could change the whole outlook.
I'll tell you where I'm leaning on who's more likely to play all 16 games.
I'm going to say Luck on that one.
Nate Duell wants to know, is there a situation in which you open your draft running back, running back, running back due to the lack of depth at the position?
All right. The number one thing that I mentioned in that 9 rules piece is draft based on value.
Mm-hmm.
I never go into a draft and say to myself, you know, absent some sort of goofy scoring, not goofy, but like some atypical scoring system, 2 quarterback leagues or 6-point passing touchdown leagues or something that heavily emphasizes a particular position. I never go, hey, I need to grab a wide receiver first or a running back first or running back, running back, running back. Right. A reminder. Most
the old
of your
Matthew
roster.
Berryism. Let the draft come to you.
Yes, let the draft come to you. And I think, you know, oftentimes what we find is that the teams that win their leagues are those that are managed well in season, attentive to the waiver wire, make smart trades. So, Mike, I am not as concerned about running back, running back, running back, or wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. I think, all things being equal, if I were to lean one way or the other, I would more often prefer running back, running back, running back. Wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver. But again, I'm just because of how the question's asked, I'm looking for an answer there.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I've done it already this season. I have no problem with it, especially if you have a flex, two running backs and a flex, because on a week-to-week basis, there's really nothing better than having a stud running back in your flex spot as well as your two running back slots. It's just, it's risky because if they get hurt, it's more likely they're going to get hurt than a receiver. Obviously added risk, but on a week-to-week basis, that's great. So I have no problem with it. A guy like LeSean McCoy has been falling to the end of the third round, and I've had a hard time saying no to that, even if I start with two running backs. So yeah, I'm totally fine with it.
All right, Keith, what else we got here?
This is a question from Roquan, and I really hope it's not Roquan Smith because I know they broke camp and he still hasn't signed. But how does this is a good one, though. How does your drafting strategy change as league size increases?
Really good question right here. And I would say this.
You kind of alluded to it already.
I know. Yeah. Stefania, why don't you take this one away here? Because I know you had some positive thoughts about this beginning of the podcast.
Well, it's really based on, like you said, the atypical scoring. You know, if I'm in a league where it's a two quarterback league, or you can use a quarterback as sort of that optimal, the flex position because they're going to put up so many points, then I target a quarterback much earlier than I would in any other regular draft because you want a top quarterback and you're going to, you know that everybody's going to vie for a top quarterback in a two quarterback league. And then you're going to wait on your second quarterback, or a two tight end league, for example, where we talk about the tight end having so much depth, you can wait on a tight end till the later rounds. Not if you need two, because then it starts getting to be really slim picking. So you're probably going to target one much sooner than you normally would.
Yeah. And I'll kind of focus on your standard starting lineups, but let's say it's a 16 team league. I'm more focused on, you know, being conscientious of teardrops, right? So, you know, if you know where it's a spot you're no longer comfortable at tight end, maybe after Kyle Rudolph or the Jordan Reed area, maybe you know you want to hit that early and not end up stuck with a you know, the 15th or like Jared Cook is your starting tight end. And especially you have to keep an eye on this in quarterback, because if your league mates pick a lot of, you know, like to pick two quarterbacks, you're going to end up starting Sam Bradford week one. You have to make sure that even if you wait, you attack that spot.
You know what I just realized? I just realized that I answered another Twitter question, which is based on the two quarterback league.
We covered it all.
Scenario.
That's all right.
But the league size actually played, the women's league is a 16 team league. That also allows for a quarterback in the flex spot. So you have the size issue in terms of, you know, there's going to be scarcity at every position virtually because you have so many people in the league. But especially when you're playing 16-team league, two quarterbacks, it's hard to find two consistent starters. So you have to take a strong quarterback.
Yeah, you can't mess up quarterback in that league.
16-team leagues also lend me to kickers in the fifth round for what it's worth. Kidding.
That would be a joke.
Keith, what do you got here?
Amy Omai 85 wants to know, I've been seeing the Jags defense consistently going in the 7th and 8th round. Is that a crazy strategy?
I have a sense that when the marathon begins tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern, of course, on ESPN, we are all company people here. At some point over the 29 hours, and this is our poll for the day, the question is the question like, is it crazy to draft the Jags in the 7th round? Is that the poll question?
Yeah, the question, if you go to @FantasyFocus.
Yep.
Yeah. Kyle, why don't you read it? Why don't you? We'll let you get some airtime.
Sure.
Kyle's asking if he can jump on the mic.
Yeah, I appreciate that. All the airtime. We've got our poll question today running through to tomorrow, so we'll be answering it at the live show. We're on at 1 o'clock during the marathon. The Jaguars' defense is as good as it gets, but what price are you willing to pay on draft day? The options are around 6 to 8, 9 to 11, 12 to 14, and is this amateur hour, which currently leads the way.
Right, so the poll question is live. You can answer it. We look forward to getting more than 2,063 votes on that question. So I what I was going to say is I anticipate this being a talking point over the next 29 hours for
Absolutely.
Obvious reasons. Mike, on paper, is this defense better than last year's defense?
I think it's very close. They lost a couple role guys. Your nickel corner, Paul Blazesny, retired. He was the third linebacker. But they added, you know, they added some pieces in the offseason as well. So I don't think it's much different. It's probably a little better. I think overall production will be down because, A, common sense. You know, you can't play at that ceiling for a whole season. And, B, they were crazy healthy. One of the healthiest teams in the league last season, just like Minnesota, on the defensive side of the ball. So you have to move the needle down a little bit. But they are still stacked. So I would say my answer to the poll would be 12 to 14. I'm going to take them before the 15th round. They're the only defense I would do that for. But again, you have to keep expectations in order. It's very hot. It's very hard to dominate like they'd had, like they did last season.
Here's the thing. You are talking about a defense that scored 8 touchdowns last year. Okay. We're also talking about, which is very difficult to do.
Yes.
Eight touchdowns is very difficult to do over the course of any season. They've already done it once. It's unlikely, even with the talent gap, even if they are more talented this year. Second of all, this is about value-based drafting. We don't know, and Kyle has given the stat many times over, where the number one ranked defense has ended up finishing in season-long scoring. But here are the names that are also being drafted, or that are being drafted behind the Jaguars right now. You could have Robert Woods on your roster. You could have Michael Crabtree. You could have Drew Brees.
Oh, you could
have Deion Lewis. You could have Duke Johnson, Pierre Garçon, Sammy Watkins. Think about the players. Like, think about what those values are for you. And again, we're talking about a team in the Jaguars that had an historically great year last year given their position. They had 11 points or fewer in 7 of the 16 games. So let's say we're talking about, like, yeah, you're putting a huge premium on a quarterback. Like, if this guy had an amazing year, he had 7 games of 11 points or fewer. Like, I get
you're talking about Big Ben on the road. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah. Like, and I'm not saying, again, they will be my number one ranked defense. They are, and they will remain that way. If I have the opportunity to draft them late in my draft, I will take them there. But I'm allowing somebody else to take them in the 7th round and happily selecting Chris Hogan or Will, or, you know, or Devin Funchess, or maybe even later. You can get, I mean, you're getting 2 rounds later, you're getting Kirk Cousins. We all preach patience on quarterbacks, but I'd rather have Kirk Cousins at 81 than the Jaguars at 64. Anything else here, Keith?
Yeah, we actually got a bunch of questions NFC North related.
Okay.
Oh.
We'll start with one. The first one being Minnesota wide receiver, Diggs or Thielen?
Oh, man, I've struggled with this one.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, I'll give a shout out to Courtney Cronin, covers the Vikings for
Does
us.
Does a great job.
I asked her this probably 2 months ago. I said, which way are do you get the impression this is going? And remember, Thielen was pretty clearly the number one last year.
Yeah,
and I said, she said Diggs. It really just looked like Diggs was going to be the number one. So, I have Thielen 12 and Diggs 13. I can't hedge it much further than that. I'm fine with either one. There's no wrong answer.
We sort of mentioned this a little earlier on in the show. People are asking, do you have to choose between these two? If you end up with either one of them, you're totally fine. We're talking about two of the most talented, probably 15 wide receivers in football, and also most productive in fantasy football.
Let me ask you this question. What happens if the draft breaks out where you could get Thielen in this round, and then a round later, Diggs is still available? Are you comfortable taking two wide receivers from the same offense if they have the skill set that Thielen and Diggs do?
Sort of like the question about the running back one and wide receiver one earlier.
Good if it makes the most sense, yes. Yep. But that's just one of those where it's also how you feel. Like if you don't enjoy it and it's going to bother you to be like, oh, well, he got one and he, like, if that's going to bother you, don't do it.
Well, everything about the Vikings bothers me, but I understand what you're saying, Stefania.
Any more, Keith, here to wrap it up?
Yeah, they went continuing on the NFC North theme.
Yep.
How do you see the Packers running back situation playing out?
Earlier I asked the question about the Colts, and I said, is it more likely that one running back emerges as the weekly play in fantasy, or that no running back separates himself enough to be a weekly starter? At best, you have a flex play in maybe deeper leagues. I asked that same question to you guys about this Packers backfield. What do you think, Mike?
I'm gonna give another shout out to Rob Domofsky here, because we just had a conversation about this. Covers the Packers for the NFL Nation.
I see what you're doing.
Yeah. I'm using sources here if I can. He said Jamal Williams, the main back, gonna run the football. We know he's good in pass protection, can catch the football. He's our lead back. Ty Montgomery, obvious passing situations when they're in shotgun throwing, which they do a lot with Aaron Rodgers.
Yep.
And Aaron Rodgers is just a whole bunch of question marks. Like,
Aaron
we don't
Jones.
Know. Aaron, what did I say?
Aaron Rodgers.
Or Aaron,
I don't
Aaron,
think
yeah.
there
no
too question
marks
marks
for Aaron
on
Rodgers.
Him. Okay.
Aaron
That's
Jones,
right, just
a whole,
checking.
Yeah, a whole bunch of question marks.
Well,
he's
he
suspended
also,
2 weeks.
He got the hamstring injury, so they hadn't really seen him in camp. You know, he's been out for a bit. So now I think they need to see him and see what they're going to potentially have when he comes back from his suspension.
Yeah.
But I still think he has a chance to emerge as
I think he's our best rusher.
The most productive running back.
Yeah, but best natural rusher, I think. But I guess that's the way, if I put a fantasy spin on that, Williams I draft first, then Montgomery, then Jones with the 2-game suspension will be third.
So I agree with both what both of you said, and I think that the more likely outcome is that none of them distinguishes themselves for a full season.
Yeah, I didn't answer your question.
Yeah,
it's okay. I would tell you this, that I think I get the most value out of Jones, because right now nobody's touching him. So you get him in a really late round, you know, you put him on the shelf. I think I drafted him in the 10-team, like some really, he was like my 6th running back.
Mm-hmm.
Save him for later.
Two more questions, both NFC North related. Keith, let's go to Detroit.
Yeah, actually, we're going to skip the Lions one since you guys already talked about Kerryon Johnson earlier on.
Good.
But we'll go with the Bears. Given the asking price, which Bears running back do you prefer? Now, I have the numbers for you here. Jordan Howard, RB16, mm-hmm. going in the fourth round in 10-team leagues. Tariq Cohen, RB32, going in the 10th round of 10-team leagues.
That's Mike, exactly where I have those two guys ranked.
Really?
Odd. I'll go Howard. I think he's a better player. There's some optimism about him catching more footballs too. Cohen's efficiency was worse than you realized last season. A little bit of a red flag.
I think when you have players, if you are assessing them commensurate with where they're being drafted, then clearly you value an RB2 more than you value a bench mm-hmm. player.
Fair.
It's just hard when you had Jordan Howard last year. This is one of those where it's the bias of what you experienced last year, recognizing that the offense is going to change, that he's probably going to have more opportunities, like you say, this year. It's hard to pull the trigger.
All right, Keith, bring us home here with one more again through the @FantasyFocus handle.
Yeah, @MangChase says he just wants to know what you have for an outlook for Ronald Jones this season.
For those who missed it, Ronald Jones was the second string running back pretty clearly in week one for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was the Peyton Barber show. I believe he played the first 13 snaps in that game, or maybe Jones got one of the first 14. Bottom line was, it was Peyton Barber early. I still think push comes to shove, he will be the back from the Buccaneers Ronald Jones will have the back from the Buccaneers that has the most value. But I've moved him closer to 30 as opposed to closer to 20 in my rankings.
I'm at 19. I think he's going to be a fringe 15 touch guy with, again, the great comp is Jamal Charles, explosive plays. He can be a fantasy asset, an RB2 with 15 touches a game. And again, I think he gets that. Remember, if they were happy with Peyton Barber, they would have taken a corner, a safety in the second round, not a running back. Jones is in the plans.
One more here, Daniel. What do you got?
You got the finger tap on the desk.
You got the finger tap.
That was emphasis.
Last one here from Nick P. Bauman, and he wants to know your thoughts on the floor and the ceiling for McCaffrey this season.
Christian Ooh. McCaffrey.
High floor.
Floor and the ceiling. High floor. I think high floor. Ceiling, right? Floor to me feels top 20 running back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'll drop.
Top 16 running back.
Can I drop one more Nation reporter? David Newton, months ago, said 200 carries for McCaffrey this year, and everything keeps seeming to go that direction. I think he was on point. If he gets to 200 carries, catches 60, 70 balls, it's going to be borderline top five production. So I'm worried about his rushing efficiency, but the floor is very high there.
All right. Well, so we've got a floor of top 16 or so and a ceiling of probably top five. I don't know.
Yeah. Massive ceiling.
A lot of guys have top five ceilings. That's just the reality. It's not like five players have a top five ceiling.
Yeah, he definitely does.
Poll results in our last minute here. Well, Kirk Cousins, is there top five upside for Kirk Cousins?
Wow.
69% of you, that's nice, say yes. 31% say no. How many players in the Browns will finish as a fantasy starter in 2018? The options were 0 or 1, 2, 3, or 4 plus. Most likely answer is 48%. I'm assuming those people believe in Jarvis Landry.
Wow.
And Josh Gordon most. They didn't have to
say, man, disrespect for Duke Johnson and David Njoku.
That's right. Tyrod. B87 on Instagram. Stefania_ESPN on Twitter. He's @MikeClay on both Twitter and Instagram. I'm @FieldYates. Reminder, very important. We'll be on TV tomorrow. That's right. They're throwing us right on ESPN at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. Lord help us. They're putting us on with the Big Boy Network. We'll be back on Wednesday with another round of Double Trouble, NFC West edition, the Seahawks, the Cardinals. Mike will be hanging out with us. In the meantime, watch the marathon all night, 29 hours. Peace out.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the camaraderie of the other bikers, a band of brothers, always there for you, rain or shine, to the amazing savings you get with Geico on your motorcycle insurance and accessories coverage all year round. But for Bucky Hornhill, it was one reason in particular.
It was my helmet hair. I was born with helmet hair. I've tried to cut it a bunch of times, even buzzing it, but it immediately just goes back to helmet hair.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.